put water on it, and then you pour it in to your 8-ounce glass baby bottle. And usually a little stays in the glass, so it's a good idea to pour a little of the water back and then pour it back into your baby bottle. That way you're assured to get the entire drop. So everybody, it doesn't matter if you are a 20-pound child or you're a 250-pound man. All that really matters is that you start off with your 8 ounces, and every day it's one more drop, and you're always taking 8 doses all day long. We're trying to keep it away from food 15 minutes at least before meals, at least. Ideally, of course, it would be an hour before and an hour after we wouldn't be eating food. But with 15 minutes, I find, you know, that still counts. And 30 minutes after a meal can still count if we're pushing it. We really need to get the doses in, or if we're doing 10 doses and we're trying to push it up, then that's one of the things that we can definitely do. It really helps us a lot. Sometimes I find that parents get mortified because they just give their child the shot of MMS, and then the child grabs an apple or something and they eat right on top of it. What I'd recommend that parent to just not consider that dose. Just consider that child's eating now, and wait a half an hour to give them another dose, because it really doesn't count if they eat right on top of it. So that's the baby bottle. And just keep going up to tolerance. You know, we try to get close to the weight. So, for instance, if we have a 50-pound child or 25-pound child or 100-pound child, we know that it's the 25-pound child is 1 drop 8 times a day. The 50-pound child is 2 drops 8 times a day. And the 100-pound child is 3 drops 8 times a day. But obviously, we have a lot of children that are somewhere in between. You know, we have 40-pound children, we have 70-pound children. So this is where this baby bottle comes in really nicely. So let's say we're going to treat a 70-pound child. We get to the 16 drops. It's for the 50-pound child, perfectly fine. And then we just keep going up and adding. And as we get kind of close to something between the 16 drops and the 24 drops, so somewhere between the 50 pounds and the 100 pounds, we want to go a little bit slower as we start to reach the midpoint, because 70 is, you know, is actually closer to 50 than it is to 100, but we still want to just be doing maybe like 3 days at one of those doses. So let's say we get to day 19, drop 19 drops in our 8 ounces. Spend 3 days there and really take a look at the child and see how the child is receiving those 19 drops. And if everything still looks good, the next day try 20 drops and stay there for 3 days. Because as we're getting closer, we really want to know what their signature dose is.
Now, before you go on, I have a question. You were saying maybe spend 3 days at day 19 and see how the child is doing, really take a good look at him, see how it's going. Could you maybe point out some reasons that you would maybe stay longer at day 19? Some things that would say, okay, maybe he's not tolerating the dose too well, or some behaviors that would point out that he's doing really well. Let's keep going to drop 20. What are we looking for?
Well, sometimes there's aggravation, and the aggravation can be just more stimming. It can be, you know, verbal stim, physical stim. Aggravations, it could be diarrhea. And, of course, there's two types of diarrhea. One is a detox diarrhea. The detox diarrhea is just a loose stool, and that's not concerning. That's actually very normal for detoxification in any realm, whether it's this one or any other one. But the liquid, like a faucet diarrhea, that doesn't usually come on from one day to the next. That's why, like I say, if we can just go 3 days at 19 drops or 20 or whatever the dose is, it's getting closer, spend 3 days at that dosage, that will avoid us to go into a full diarrhea, because we can typically see a child having a Herxheimer's or a die-off when they're just irritated, aggravated. There's a lot of different types of behaviors that happen with that. And we typically, if we saw that they were better at 18 drops, then that next day go back down to 18 drops and don't give any more of that rest of that day. And even if we want to, we can stop the whole effect of MMS by a glass of orange juice or taking, you know, 5 grams of vitamin C or whatever, depending on the weight of the child, how much we would need to use, or some activated charcoal, kind of depending on what we would see.
Very good. You mentioned a Herxheimer's or die-off reaction. Could you maybe go through a few more of the symptoms of a Herxheimer's so we would be able to recognize those as to what's going on, so we would know that it was actually that and not a rash or some other thing that would be happening?
Well, typically when we have a die-off or a Herxheimer's, and we try to go really low and really slow to avoid those kind of things, but sometimes it's just not possible to avoid them completely. So what we need to do is we need to go with the Herxheimer's and the die-off, we might be seeing some fever, or we might be seeing lack of appetite, or we might be seeing that they take a nap and they don't usually take a nap, or the more than loose stool that would just be standard for the detox, but still that would fall into it. Return of old behaviors when we're killing off pathogens that typically look like, that typically look a lot like the actual growth of it, like a bacteria, for instance. You might actually see more tantruming, more aggravations, more anger. But as obviously we're working through the pathogen, so it's not like it's growing at that point. But the die-off still is the exact same sometimes as the parasite or the pathogen itself.
Very good. And I wanted to ask one more thing about the baby bottle before we move on to the next protocol development. How many hours can the baby bottle last during the day? And is it better to have it refrigerated? What happens if we don't?
It doesn't have to be refrigerated, but MMS tastes a whole lot better if it is refrigerated. So when I'm at home, I like to leave them in the refrigerator, and then I even buy the smaller 4-ounce baby bottles in glass that I can take in my purse, and they're nice for just going to the grocery store and things like that. You get usually a couple of doses in on your way out to run errands, things like that. What was the other one with the baby bottle?
How many hours does it last?
It can last all day, and actually, sometimes we can even save a dose for the next morning. There's a mom who also has a little issue in the morning, like I do, getting moving and getting, you know, drops going before we can even see at 6 a.m. So sometimes you can make it at night for a morning dose. I wouldn't recommend making your dose for the day the night before, but if we need something like that, like I just usually need just to get the coffee pot running, and so then I can make my dose for the morning. I'll make it at night, I'll leave it in the fridge, and I can just go grab it and give it to him first thing in the morning.
Okay, that sounds great. Would you like to talk about maybe the 72-2 next, which is another protocol development that she's had recently?
72-2 is actually a really cute story. There was a mom who really gave a lot of thought to pathogens, and she thought, what happens when my child goes to sleep at night at 9-10 o'clock at night, and then he wakes up at 8 or 9 in the morning, and these pathogens had 12 hours really just to, you know, grow and develop. And so she actually did 72 hours because she took it from Friday after school. She started giving her child, because I told her that 8 doses a day is the minimum MMS dose that you want to take. 12 is ideal. So somewhere between 8 and 12 is a goal if we can get it. It's really difficult for most people to get 8 in, so it's hard to ask people for 12. But if you can get 12 in, it's fantastic, and there's one way to get 12 in is by not sleeping through the night. So this mom went from, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and every 2 hours she gave her child a dose, whatever the child weighed. Let's just say the child weighed 25 pounds. So that would be one drop, it was one drop. So she would give him one drop every 2 hours, and she did it all night long, so all through the night, all day long, all through the night, and it ended on Monday morning, and by Wednesday, her child was completely different. She was so excited with what she saw, so then I started having other families do the same thing, and a lot of families really became addicted to it because you're able to actually kill down a lot of the pathogens that are in there and the eggs that are going to grow and the adolescents and so on. And so it's really a great opportunity, and there's no food in there, so the MMS can go directly in and get the pathogens. And so there's really not that issue with all the food we have going in. So that's a really nice one if you want to see some nice improvement after, you know, usually the first day everyone's a little aggravated because there has been a lot of die-off and, you know, no one's been sleeping. But probably by 2, and the kids can sleep. You can show up with a syringe in the middle of the night, and you can even preload the syringes. So long as they're about 1 ounce of water is really ideal, and you can give it to them while they sleep. And usually by Wednesday, if we do a Friday through a Monday morning, usually by Wednesday we're seeing some nice new development in the road to recovery.
One thing, you mentioned a syringe. You're talking about a plastic syringe. You're going to put the MMS. It's still given orally, correct? We're not talking about injectable. I just want to be really clear on that point.
No, we're definitely not talking about an injectable. We're not injecting anything here. Nothing. Some of the syringes, you know, they just can look like that. Some of them are bigger. This is a very small syringe, but they're nice because, and there's other ones too. I know a lot of the supplement companies have them too, and so you can just get those. They have a little pump on the end. I think Walgreens even sells them. CVS, those types of places, they sell them too. So, yeah, any of those syringes work. So long as we can get about 1 ounce of water is ideal on the minimum.
Very good. And you mentioned that sometimes after that 72-2, the parents are seeing a lot of rapid improvement in the kids. Could you maybe say some of the improvements that some of these parents have seen with their children?
A lot of them have seen more language, better eye contact, sleeping through the night. We do a 72-2 after we're at a full dose of MMS orally and we have the rectal and the baths in, then we can go ahead and do a 72-2. I wouldn't recommend doing it beforehand. So a lot of the improvements we've seen kind of coming along, but there was a mom the other day, I forget exactly what happened, but her son had like some distinct changes just on accepting food and just very neurotypical behavior the day after that was very exciting for the family. Because after you put in a long weekend, it's sure nice to see some fruits from your labors.
Oh, definitely. Now, something that I've heard happen sometimes, a 72-2 or otherwise, is a fever reaction. And that's something really important because it was beaten into a lot of our heads to cut off a fever. But now you're saying something different about that. Could you go into a little bit about this fever therapy?
Well, I read a book by Dr. Kenny Bach. It's called The Road to Immunity. It's a fabulous book if you get the chance, The Road to Immunity. And in the book, he talks about fever therapy. And I think this is something that in our modern day society, we've really lost some of the things like enemas, fever therapies. Of course, they probably didn't call it fever therapies back in the day. But if you let fever run its course, of course, we're not just going to let it go willy-nilly. We're going to work on it, but we're not going to give a drug to suppress it. Because if we suppress it, then we don't get this opportunity to actually heat up, burn, boil virus and bacteria that are living in there. And that way, after we do a fever therapy, you know, the kids can be pretty tired from it because it's been, you know, 3 or 4 days. But typically we have nice improvements after that. I've seen some really amazing things using fever therapy. And it is really common when we're using chlorine dioxide to get a fever because it causes the immune system to wake up and realize, you know, we have autism in the house. We got a real problem here. We have to do something about this. And the immune system wasn't paying much attention for the last several years that the child has had the autism. So it's actually an exciting thing for me when I see children get it. And I know parents get really scared. And it is a really scary thing to watch your child, you know, be listless when you usually have a very active child. But it is a great opportunity to do a lot of damage to those pathogens that are very deep into the body.
Very good. There's something else that we're going to talk about that has become a real hot topic on the Facebook group lately, and that is enemas. There has been a lot of improvements, and there has been a lot of questions. So maybe you could start us off with the why of the enemas, and we could actually go through the hows, and then we could take any questions.
Okay, you're going to remind me because I can't see
where
my glasses
are.
The enemas are so fantastic for so many reasons. One of the reasons that I love the enema so much is because it allows us to get into the colon, and health begins in the colon. If you have a healthy colon, you're going to be a pretty healthy person. So if we can start working this autism as we know our children are so involved. But if we can get that colon healthy, things are definitely going to be getting better. So we start with the enemas. We want a healthy colon. Also, through the colon, we're able to absorb very quickly into the bloodstream the chlorine dioxide, which is an oxidizer. It's going to get into the blood, which also has a biofilm. And it's going to be able to kill the pathogens that are in the bloodstream as well. MMS does pass the blood-brain barrier, so hopefully it's going to help us with some of those things that we've known to, like the viruses we have in the brain and some other things of that nature. So that's another reason why we like the enema. Another reason why it's very exciting to use the enema, and exciting, I mean very exciting, because we're trying to recover, we're trying to cure our children, we're trying to make them healthy. And so when us parents do an enema on the child, it's traumatic and it can be very sad because, you know, this is something we never want to do, and it's just a whole thing that we're not used to in our culture. It's not even accepted to do that, even though, you know, back in the 1800s and who knows how long before, people were doing enemas, and that's how they were healing all their 17 children in the middle of nowhere. There was, you know, none of this modern-day medicine in every corner. So when we have to do an enema, it's not a wonderful thing, but it's a wonderful thing when the things come out like biofilm, worms, yeast. So we're seeing all kinds of things come out in the biofilm in the stool, because it's not all stool. We're actually able to clean the intestines. And, of course, it takes a long time because these kids have some pretty funny things in there. Not funny, but very strange. And, of course, when we post photos and we share them on the Facebook group, I think that it's an important thing for us to all start to see to know what we're seeing. And, of course, to feel comfortable about what we're seeing, because we are kind of going places where before the biomed wasn't really going here. We're kind of going back to basics. And this is kind of where the protocol that we're using that's covered so many children is really separating from the things that we're used to seeing in biomed. Biomed, we're typically used to seeing that we need to replace, oh, the child doesn't have any magnesium, doesn't have any zinc, we need antioxidants, and we're shoving all these supplements in the child, and the child, you know, might get a little bit better because the diet's good and stuff like that. But in the long run, we're not making the big strides because we're actually feeding pathogens, and the idea is not to have a healthier pathogen that makes it more difficult to kill. So we need to actually starve the pathogen, which doesn't mean give no nutrition. It means that we need to pick and choose what it is that we're going to give. And it's very important that we focus directly on the pathogens themselves so that they can stop being in our child and causing the autism that they're causing.
So one of the most fundamental differences in the protocol that you've developed these days is that you are not treating, I guess, what you would call a lack of supplements. You're rather treating an excess of pathogens.
Exactly.
Very good. Okay, so now we're going to keep going with the enema theme. I know you have some of the tools you use here to do enema.
This is it.
The enema kit.
This is the enema kit, and so, I have all of my 60 milliliter syringes. So what I do, and many of you have seen on the Facebook page, that we fill them with water first. So what I do is I fill them all with filtered water. And, of course, my son is 11, so he can handle, he does several of these. And, of course, they come nice and clean and sealed in their little bags. But anyway, so what I do is I fill these all with water first, and then I take the water, I pull them up, I fill it with the water, and then when they're all full of water, just plain water, or filtered water, I put them into a bowl, all the water in a bowl. Then I develop my, depending on the weight of your child, it could be 8 drops, it could be 20 drops. My child is 115 pounds, so I use 20 drops. So I make my 20 drops in my shot glass. I pour that into my bowl with all my water in it, and I make sure that I get all the liquid out of there. And then I start immediately pulling and pulling. So I fill all of my syringes, and then once I have all my syringes filled, I ask my son to come and lay down, and he lays face down, and then I'm able to... this is the syringe that I use, and so what I'm able to do is this one actually has like a little screwy mechanism there, so this can stay in, this, and it's very small, as you can see, it's very small, very thin, and very flexible, it's a very flexible tube, so it's comfortable, and then all I do is I just switch this out, so each one of them, I just put it on, and then I push it in. And then when it's empty, I take it off, and the next one, and the next one, until they're all done. And then, like we're all seeing in this group, we're all trying to keep it, you know, 1 to 5 minutes. And some children only last 20 minutes, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And the important thing is that every day that we do an enema, that we're lasting a little bit longer than the time before. And I don't think that anybody should feel bad, because there was one mom today, I think I saw in the Facebook group, saying that the child only held it for maybe 20 seconds, and then really nothing came out. But then later on, there was a whole bunch of things that came out, and that was good. But obviously, the longer it stays in, the better. So this child actually would have absorbed that MMS into the bloodstream, so that would have really been a beneficial thing.
Excellent. Okay. Sorry. Yes, we had a question on... the live feed earlier, talking about toothpaste and wanting to know, you know, are there other options besides, you know, Colgate and Crest for those of us who don't want to give fluoride to our children through the toothpaste? So are there other options?
Well, here's a really nice thing. I really like, this is my, it's not full right now, but this is my spray bottle. And my spray bottle is 4 ounces. So for every ounce of water, I put in 10 drops of MMS. So this is a 4-ounce bottle, so I put in 40 drops of MMS, and when it's sealed, the MMS stays in there, and it lasts until the color changes clear. So if it's yellow, it's still working. We can use this for our vegetables, for our fruit, for our countertops, for our face. My husband's growing hair with it. We can also use it for brushing our teeth. In the United States, obviously, everywhere you go, you can find fluoride-free toothpaste. In Latin America, it's very difficult. So for our kids, what you can do is you can just spray the bristles of the brush. Oh, sorry. And then you can brush the gums and the tongue and the teeth. And this is really good. I actually started doing this recently myself. because I was feeling I urgently need to go to the dentist for dental cleaning. And I just started doing this in the meantime when I get an appointment. And actually, it seems to last. My teeth are actually even cleaner than before. So that's a really nice thing to use. And we can keep, you can keep this in your bathroom right by your toothbrush. And that's a really good alternative to using toothpaste, especially for people that can't get fluoride-free toothpaste.
Excellent. And I had another question come through the live feed. It's going back to the fever therapy. She wanted to know, so what exactly do you do for the fever therapy?
Oh, that's right.
Wet socks on the feet, cold compresses.
Oh, good.
How exactly do you carry it through?
Good. Okay, that's a great question. Whatever the child's full dose is, so we're gonna go back to, let's pick the 50-pound child right now. The 50-pound child is using two drops. And, of course, the moms that we have our kids that are between, they're 40 pounds or 70 pounds or whatever, we're using our bottle, that's fine, too. But let's just, for argument's sake, we're going to use the two-drop 50-pound child. So imagine two-drop 50-pound child gets a fever. We're going to give him a dose of MMS every single hour. If, in fact, he vomits for some reason, we're going to then give a few hours off and then just give one drop doses. It doesn't matter if it is a full drop, is a full dose of his being two drops in that case. The important thing is to be getting it in orally, to be taking baths in it, and to be doing enemas with it. That's going to help the body, the immune system work through this. And I really recommend doing like cold compresses on the forehead and on the back of the neck, keeping the child fresh. This also comes from Dr. Kenny's Bach Road to Immunity. It's a really good piece. I think it's really important to know that these are things that we should do. Again, supporting the fever, yet not letting the fever go too high. And definitely, if in fact it does reach something that's a little bit higher, like 102, 103 sometimes, we can do a bigger dose, like three drops, and go up for like every hour. Like let's say 8 o'clock, give three drops, and then 9 o'clock, give three drops. And then by 10 o'clock, we can give two drops again. So it kind of depends on the case. But that's typically how it goes, and it's just really important, even if you just drop down to one drop every hour, the importance is going to be that it's every hour that child's awake, and then a bath every single day during the fever, and an enema every single day during the fever. Because normally we're doing an enema like on a Monday, a bath on a Tuesday, and I'm on a Wednesday, a bath on a Thursday. So we're alternating the days, and then, of course, the oral is every single day. But on a day of a fever or the period of time there's a fever, it's oral every hour, even if you have to drop down to just one drop in every single dose, and doing the bath and the enemas. And when you do the bath and the enema on the fever, when they have a fever, do the bath in the morning and the enema in the evening, or the enema in the morning and the bath in the evening, because sometimes it's just way too much, and then they won't feel very good either. So we have to kind of keep them a little bit apart.
Excellent. Okay. So those are the majority of the new protocol developments, I would say. Would you like to talk a little bit about one of the questions I received over email, which was, what is the difference between going low and slow for a child and going low and slow for an adult? Do they start different? Do we load the dose differently? How do we go about that?
That's a really good question. I like that so much. Thank you. With the baby bottle, this really avoids any problems, because we're finding in our Facebook group that there's a lot of moms that start off with their kids, and obviously their kids are weighing, 30, 40 pounds. Mom's weighing probably 115 or 130 pounds, somewhere in there. And, of course, some weigh less, of course. But still, moms, we're more toxic. Well, obviously we're toxic because we had children that were probably a little more toxic than the average child. So what we would like to do is everyone start off with the 8 ounces, put in one drop, and then take 1 ounce of that all day long. And if you've taken 4, 5, 6 doses, if you start to feel a little dizzy, even though you haven't even taken a whole drop in the day, don't take any more. Toss that out for the day, and then tomorrow start up again. The idea isn't to force yourself into a detox. The idea is to help the body detoxify, but we never really want to make the body sick, because that actually taxes the body more. So everybody starts off the same way. And so when I get the one child at 160 pounds, we're going to keep going up in the bottle. So typically for an adult, we usually just stay, if it's an adult that has something like thyroid or diabetes or something like that, we're going to just stay at 3 drops 8 times a day, and that should be fine. We do that for 2 to 4 months, and then the symptoms are gone. They do the lab tests, and they're typically okay. But in the case of autism, because it's chronic and it's been around for a long time, and we have deep-seated pathogens, it's a really good idea to keep going up in dosage to tolerance. My son at one time was taking between 5 and 6 drops 8 times a day, and doing quite well. So it just depends on the person. And again, adults or children, just keep going up. But with kids, then we work a little bit closer with it too.
Okay, that's excellent. I just had a question come through live. And she would like to know, how long have you personally been using MMS through enemas for your son, and what kind of progress have you seen?
My son is probably not my favorite case to discuss because my son is probably like the most non-responder, not to jinx him, of all the children that I've treated. But my son has done extremely well on 3 things. One was diet, one was hyperbarics, and the other one was MMS. And that's how my journey began. My son started using orally MMS August 17th of 2010. Then I started helping some families, and there was a dad who started doing the enemas. He had read about the enemas, and he started doing the enemas. That was February of 2011. His son started dumping out, looked like jellyfish in some of the photos, and worms and all kinds of stuff. And his son started getting more language and doing really, really well. Well, then all the parents, we started doing enemas. And I want to say that I started doing enemas with Patrick about a year ago. And he just has more clarity. He's just more crisp, a lot more neurotypical looking. With Patrick, it definitely was just a spark that really, you know, kind of brought us a little bit further along his recovery. You know, smaller children have better results, but Patrick, he still is a trailblazer and pushes his mother to find more and more things to recover him and anybody else in my path, hopefully, God willing, willing to receive.
That's for sure. So staying on the enema train here, someone wanted to know more about, like, the actual physical logistics of the enema. How does the child lay down? Do you do it on the floor? Are you in the bathroom? What is the easiest way to do this?
Well, because I don't have a lot of experience with other people's children, I do have some ideas of a couple of different, 3 different things. One is my child, he'll lay down. I'll ask him, lay down. He'll lay down on his stomach. And what I do is I get diaper wipes because people say, oh, do you need to use petroleum jelly or aloe vera? I don't really like using especially petroleum jelly. But there's really no need to, because if you can just use a diaper wipe to wipe as if you were cleaning the anus back there, then you can, it actually kind of lubricates a little bit, then you're able to get the little tubing in without any aggravation there. And so face down, and they say it's a good idea to kind of roll them from the left side to the right side to get it to go up into the colon. That depends. Some kids don't really want to be rolled around. Mine doesn't like to be rolled around too much either. And then there's other things. I know some parents, they put the child across both of their laps, and then they do it that way, and then they just put them on the toilet when the 5 minutes is up. I've seen also making the bathroom floor very comfortable, because some parents are afraid that there's going to be some loss of sphincter control, and the child might go on the floor, so it's better just to keep it in the bathroom. So they put a nice towel down, nice and clean, and then they put the child face down. Or just on their stomach, because some kids, they put their heads aside, or even like my son, he keeps his head up, and they apply it that way. And then there's some kids that really fight it and they really don't like it, and so then sometimes we can use a position that we've used for IV chelation and things like that, that typically puts the child kind of locked between the parent's leg, and then the bun is in the air, and so then they're sort of bent over like that, and then we can have access also. It just sort of depends on the circumstances, but those are some of the ways that I've seen it done.
Very good. Okay, changing direction slightly, a question came through. Could you please slowly show us exactly what it is that you do with the ring around the baby bottle and that disc? So when you're preparing the baby bottle to go in the day, how exactly do you put this together? So you've taken the nipple off.
The nipple's is garbage. We don't need the nipple. These are the 3 pieces. The baby bottle, and there's like a disc. It's kind of like a quarter, a disc.
Almost looks like a little hat, a little sombrero.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. And that fits really nicely over the hole, so it covers that, keeping the gas inside. And then we have the screw top, and then we just tighten it. And we keep it tight. And the tightness isn't so that it doesn't leak in your purse, because it leaks in your purse. So, you know, don't be misled by the fact that it has a screw top on it. But it's keeping the gas in. So it's good for us. And like I said, if you want to take – this I like to keep in the house. But if you like to get – they have 4-ounce ones. And then the 4-ounce ones you can travel around with, and they fit in a Ziploc bag. And so you can take them around when you're going to the grocery store and things like that.
Very good. Okay, now, you were talking before about the 72-2. Someone had written in wondering what dose do you use during the 72-2 or the 12-2, which is something that I hadn't heard of before. So maybe you could talk about that for a second.
I've never heard of a 12-2, so I don't know what a 12-2 is, but I would imagine it's just, oh, you know what they're probably talking about? Yeah. One day, Jim Humble, I talked to him, this goes back many moons ago, and I was telling him, oh, you know, eight doses. And he goes, you know, Carrie, 8 doses is the minimum that I would like to see somebody get in a day. And so I was like, oh. So pretty much when someone says to me, well, I'm able to get in 7, it's like, no, you need to get to 8. And then if you want to be really, really, you know, on this, we can do 12 doses a day. So there was a time I did 12 doses that almost made me nuts. But 12 doses a day would be pretty much every 2 hours. But as long as it's every hour, and then you can skip periods of time, because a lot of our kids go to school, so there's periods of time we can't even touch them. So this is nice for the weekend maybe when you actually have the kids around, or if somebody gets up early, the nice way to feel like you're kind of getting even is to just start dosing. And it doesn't have to be every 2 hours. I would just say it's 12 doses over the period of the day. So whatever time the child gets up, getting 12 doses in, that's kind of with my own mind sometimes when I'm doing things like that. Maybe this might work for you also. Like I know I like the diet, specific carbohydrate diet. Anyway, I'm not going to get into diet. But a lot of the days my son spends eating specific carbohydrate, no grains at all. And I feel kind of like I did a good thing. Same thing, like some days if I actually get more opportunity, like if by 6 o'clock in the afternoon we've already taken our 8 doses, I'm pretty excited because then I know I'm going to get them probably 10 or 11 that day. So you can kind of play games with yourself, like can I fit it into the day? And then weekends are days that we can definitely take advantage of that. And then, of course, during the week it's usually probably just barely making it to the 8 doses a day.
So you wouldn't do a 72-2 until you get to the child's full dose for their weight. Is
oh,
that
Lord,
what I'm
no, not at all. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't do a 72-2 until after we have the oral in and everything's great. We have the enemas in for a week and we have the baths in for a week. And at that point is when I would attempt the 72-2. Like, we've been at peace. Everything's looking good. We don't have any aggravations. Because you never want to throw in something that could be more aggravating to an already bad situation. I had an email a couple days ago about a child that has liquid diarrhea. But when did this start? I mean, these things, that's why we really need to be watching them. These things don't just start up overnight. They kind of, like, come on. We start to see something. And, you know, and we don't let them go for periods of time. We always back down or stop. And then we pick up the next day at a lower dose. So there's always ways to get around that, but we definitely need to be vigilant of what's happening, especially when we're doing this, because we are really detoxifying the body. And if you think about what we're doing, we're detoxifying the body of autism. And autism is so toxic. So our kids are getting healthier, but of course this whole process of dumping toxins and killing pathogens is huge. It's really a big undertaking. It's not like, I know we see these little drops and go, all these little drops, but there's so much that's happening, you know, with our oxidizers, you know, ozone therapy, oxygen therapy, chlorine dioxide. These are strong. They're not necessarily strong. The chlorine dioxide is not so strong, but they're really potent. They're able to do a lot of things that we're not used to seeing with our kids because we're used to giving them supplementation or some amino acids and things like that. We don't typically see detox with it because we're not detoxifying with it.
Okay, excellent. One question just came in we're going to deal with real quick. What is the youngest age when we can start using MMS?
The youngest child that I've ever used MMS with was 2 months old. It was a sibling of a child with autism who was already experiencing constipation and starting to have chronic runny nose and ear infections and things like that. So we started that child off on exactly that. We started the child off on like a baby bottle of 1 drop. And then we stayed there for a little bit and then we went up a little bit more. And that child, I think, weighed about 20 pounds, no, not 20 pounds, maybe 11 pounds, something like that. So we stayed very low. I want to say we stayed at a quarter of a drop for quite a while.
And what were the results of that?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know what happened with that case because I haven't seen that child since I was a child in Venezuela that I saw.
Okay, very good. But that was the youngest child that you have known that ever started the MMS, your MMS protocol. But Jim Humble has also mentioned that he's worked with thousands of babies over the years as well without any negative reactions.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Very good.
And the youngest child that I treated with autism, you know, in a full protocol was about a year and a half old, a year and 8 months. That's about the youngest child that's done the full protocol. And they do fine, you know, because, again, we're just going at the pace of that person's body. So we're not really, as we use the guide, you know, we use the 25-pound one drop and the 50-pound two drop and the 100-pound three drop. Those are just guides. They're not absolutes. It's not a law. So if we start off with the baby bottle of the 8 ounce and we just start off with one drop, that's an eighth of a drop in each dose. And if we get to, you know, five or six and we're seeing this child's tired or something looks just out of sorts, we don't give any more. And the next day we can actually break that down. We can give a half drop dose. We can break that bottle. We can pour out half the bottle and put more water in it. We can make that even a lower dose, lower than an eighth of a drop. If we need to go to a 16th of a drop, we can do that.
Before we continue with the more specific questions, you were mentioning something a while ago that what we're doing here is we're actually healing the body of autism, which is a major undertaking. And there's some things that I've always heard you say that all the children with autism have in common, and that's why MMS works so well for them. Would you elaborate a little bit more on why this MMS has become such an important piece of the autism puzzle?
Well, back in 2007, Dr. Anju Usman, who is a genius and a beautiful person all at the same time, she gave us a really important piece, which is the biofilm. And her biofilm protocol works on the fact that our children have, in the biofilm, in the intestine, and there is also in the blood, but mostly in the intestine, clusters, and they're bound together. So we have virus, bacteria, candida, and a heavy metal. And what's really nice about the chlorine dioxide is that it oxidizes the pathogens, the virus, the bacteria, and the candida, and it neutralizes the heavy metal. So then the heavy metal can't even stick around, and it goes out. That's why it's so effective for taking care of the biofilm. And, of course, the biofilm is causing inflammation, and the pathogens are causing problems in the body, which is causing oxidative stress in the body because we're having all the stools of the pathogens, because obviously they are living and they're eating and they're having their excrement, and that's all causing all kinds of havoc in the body. So to be able to work down the biofilms in this way so efficiently, we're able to, instead of giving an antibiotic, an antiviral, an antifungal, and then some chelator, we're actually able to take care of this all in one product. And at a very, very low cost. And, of course, once we kill off more of those things, inflammation comes down. I did the nalgase with my son last summer, and he came out normal. But that would definitely be because we're using the MMS, not because he didn't need the product.
Excellent. So we're going to continue with this point. Before MMS came into your life, you had already had your clinic for, 4-6 years? And how many kids had been recovered at that point, and now how many kids have been recovered at this point since MMS has come onto the scene? I think this is an important point.
Yeah, the clinic opened in 2006, and MMS didn't come into my life until 2010. In 2006 to 2010, there were two children to recover. There was a lot of supplements. There was a specific carbohydrate diet. There was a lot of hyperbarics. There was a lot of IV chelation. There was a lot of phosphatidylcholine injections, glutathione. It was almost painful to watch these children suffering this way, and only two of all the children that we saw come through the clinic, and that was really very difficult to watch. And so, people would come to the clinic, and I would explain to them about the diet and the damn protocol, and here's the book, and here's what we're doing, and you know, kids would get better because you know you take away gluten and casein, and you know inflammation goes down, allergies go down, and so the children do get better. But they don't recover, and that's the thing. I mean, better is great, but we're working really hard, and we're really working towards recovery. So I think that we need to keep on going. And this is kind of a spiritual thing, but it was July of 2010, and I was really kind of feeling like a liar. I would go to the clinic, and I would tell people about the diet and the supplements. The autism was treatable, avoidable, curable, and, you know, here are these damn doctors that are curing people with 38%. But, you know, we weren't really seeing a lot of that. Like, you hear it, but you don't really see it. And so I really asked the universe, God, the angels, whatever it is that's helping, my mission was to help people to heal their children, then I would really need to have a tool in which to work with. And there were no lightning bolts, and there were no voices, and there was nothing, so there's no reason to call in the men with the long sleeves. But I started to remember that a year prior, I had bought these two cute, well, actually I bought 10 of them because they were so cute. That's my OCD thing. These very cute bottles, because when I was visiting a doctor in Guadalajara, his nurse walked in, and she had a big box full of these, you know, green and blue bottles. And I said, oh, what's that? He said, oh, they're detoxification drops, and, you know, you can, you know, heal yourself. And I thought, oh, I'll take 10 of each. And so I used them myself that year, which would have been 2009. I used a drop, and I broke out in a rash, which obviously was my childhood chicken pox. But anyway, didn't know that then. And so I shelved them, but I started to remember them in July of 2010. And that is when I started to do a lot of Googling of MMS, because I thought if I went to my husband and told him I had another crazy idea that was going to cure our son, and then he would probably ask me, where do you have to fly to and how much is it going to cost me? But I didn't do that first. I actually went and I researched it, and I saw that there was absolutely nothing about MMS and autism. There was nothing about autismo. There was nothing about it. And so that is when I started to think, well, okay, what's autism? It's inflammation. It's heavy metals. And so as I started to read about MMS, heavy metals, MMS neutralizes heavy metals by blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's great. MMS inflammation. MMS is able to help the body get rid of inflammation by cutting down the pathogens. And then, of course, I went pathogen by pathogen. I went through them all, and a virus, bacteria, candida, it cures AIDS, cures, heals, symptom-free. So it depends on how you want to see that. But so symptom-free, I guess, would be the proper word to say for healed and cured. So people were getting symptom-free of all these things that they shared with our children. So that's when I went to my husband, and I actually had some friends that came out of the chamber that day, and instead of her saying hi to me normally, she turned the corner and she said, I'm taking MMS. And I thought that was definitely the aha moment, that this is really something that we need to do. And so then she and I started talking a little bit more about it, and she had done more research as well. And then we got into a group discussion with my husband, and then he said, okay, I'll take it for 3 days, and if I don't die, then we can use it for Patrick. And in 3 days, he said, I feel great, so, you know, go ahead. And I didn't really know what I was doing, so I gave him, you know, a drop, because I read in the internet, it was like, you know, it was doses in the morning and doses at night, and that was kind of how they were doing things. And so I gave him a drop in the morning, and I gave him a drop at night, and I didn't really see anything. And then I heard, no, it's three times a day. So the next day, because I could see my notes, I kept notes on it, and then three times a day. And well, anyway, by the time I finally got word from Jim back at the ranch, he would say, no, do it eight times a day, and it's one drop eight times a day for 25-pound kids. It's two drops eight times a day for 50-pound kids, and it's three drops eight times a day for the 100-pound kids. Well, my son was 100 pounds, so I started to give him three drops eight times that day. Well, of course, there was a lot of detoxifying going on. It was all coming out of his mouth. So a lot of vomiting going on, but there was phenomenal eye contact. Of course, he wasn't vomiting constantly. And then that night, it was day seven, and I have it written down. Of course, there was vomiting during the day. It was 9 o'clock at night, and my son was a child who could stand in front of the YouTube until 3 or 4 in the morning, and that wouldn't matter. If you never said go to bed, he would never go to bed. And he turned to me at 9 o'clock as if he had a watch on his hand, and he said, I want bed. Patrick, that's something he would have never said. He would might ask for food because it was a real driving desire, but to go to bed and leave the computer, that wouldn't be something he'd want to do. And so I just said, okay, and I stood there frozen because I couldn't believe that he was saying that. And then he started to go up the stairs, so I followed him up the stairs. And when we got to the top of the stairs, and he was in his room and I was at the door, he turned to me and said, I want take bath. These are all his bed. These are all his routines in the evening. And these are all things that I've been, you know, all these years I've been like, let's take a bath. Let's go to bed. I was the cheerleader for the evening routine. And so I said, and he looked me right in the face and said, I want to take a bath. Oh, let's take a bath. So he gets in the bathroom, still not believing this. Nobody else is around to share this with. And I'm also kind of thinking it's not going to last because, you know, my son doesn't respond to anything. So, you know, why should this be any different? And then he's laughing. He's really candid. He's completely engaged. He's bathing himself and he's, you know, laughing. And so then I'm drying him off after the bath is over. And he's laughing and he says, I want brushed teeth. This has like never been said. These words have never been uttered. So we're brushing his teeth and he's laughing. And then he says, he has apraxia. Then he says, and then after the teeth are brushed, he says, I want Kankit. And I'm like, Kankit, Kankit, what's Kankit? And a blanket? Blanket, yes. And he runs and jumps into the bed, which running and jumping on the bed, like he might run, maybe, but he might walk. Ran, jumped on the bed, an action never happened, you know, before that. And then we were like playing with the blanket and roughing around. He was laughing, giggling. And then when he would turn, he would look me right in the eyes, straight into the eyes and smiling. That was the first week of MMS. And that was when I realized that we were onto something. Didn't know how big this was going to be, but I knew we were onto something. So then after that point, when people would come to see me at the clinic and they would be like, okay, you know, we're ready to do that thing for the yeast. I'd be like, well, there's these drops. And so people started to use these drops. They would order them online, and then at that point I was starting to learn how to use them slower. You know, of course, with my son it went pretty quickly, and there was a lot of detoxifying. But then as we went with the little kids, we would do, you know, one drop, and the next day we'd add another drop. And that's why the baby bottle is even more wonderful, because it really breaks up. So every day it's only 1/8 of a drop more than the day before in a dose, instead of actually going ahead and giving one full drop or two full drops. So that I think has helped a lot too. So every time the protocol gets a little bit better. And sometimes when I'm doing a conference, people say, oh, well, I've just heard you talk about this a couple months ago and it's changed. The protocols are going to keep changing because they're really still new. I know we're onto something, and I know like the diatomaceous earth, like the ketone water, like the MMS, these kind of things are good and they're going to just get better because we're going to be learning how to use them better.
I need to say something right now before you go on. Speaking about protocols and changes and updates, anybody who's listening right now, if you have not told me that you wanted to get on our mailing list for our newsletter, can you please leave me your email right now in the live comments or email me my personal email. It's PICO138@Hotmail. We are getting together a mailing list, and we're going to be doing a newsletter. And that's going to keep everybody abreast of all these changes that Carrie's talking about right now, because things are changing a lot and they're changing quickly, and it's important that we're all on the same page so that, you know, we don't lose any time. We know that when we're dealing with autism, the time is of the essence. So we want everybody to always be on the same page and be up to date with what Carrie's doing all the time. So please either email me or chat me right now your emails if you want to be on our newsletter. Okay, so I've got a couple questions right now. Uh-huh. What can we do if the child's allergic to citric acid or have high levels of citric acid in labs? Have you ever come across somebody that was allergic to citric acid?
I've never come across, because that would be somebody that couldn't take oranges or couldn't tolerate oranges or lemons or lime. I've never met anybody like that or heard of anybody like that. I'm sure it's possible. Never actually seen it or heard it. And the citric acid actually becomes something else. So chemically it changes. So I would say that even if somebody was high in something in a lab, typically the chlorine dioxide would typically heal whatever was causing it to be that way.
Because, yeah, you're coming to an important point there, which is we have two solutions at the beginning. We have two separate compounds. We have the NaClO2, we have the sodium chlorite, which is what it starts off as, and we have the citric acid, which is the activator. When those two come together, they are no longer their two individual compounds. They become chlorine dioxide, which is the ClO2. That's actually what we're taking, what we're doing orally in the baths and the enemas and all this. That's chlorine dioxide, ClO2. So actually, the citric acid is no longer present when you're taking the ClO2. That's my understanding. I'm also not a chemist, but that's how I would understand it.
Yeah, what we're thinking about doing is maybe next week I could do one of these with in Spanish, and we'd like to do one with me and Jim, and then maybe when Andreas Kalker is here, who's a fabulous scientist, and he's somebody who has been so generous to me, to my protocols, to helping me to really find the solutions with our children with the autism. He is just a brilliant scientist, and he's able to explain through all the chemistry of it, which is not my strong point. But he's going to be here, I think, the 7th of May, so maybe we could possibly set one up. I think it would be a good idea to get in touch with, you know, Kim, if, in fact, there's people that are really interested in that. We can kind of go back and forth between, there'll be some questions, obviously, for people about protocols like mine, and there's going to be questions that people really want to know about the science, you know, how am I not giving my kid bleach, and why is, they're saying it's 28% and it's toxic. Of course, the 28% is what's in the bottle. We're actually only using, like, a zero point something of it. So those are things that, that Andreas or and or Jim could both be fabulous at answering those questions.
Very good. We are going to go back for just a second to enemas again. Can we use a regular enema kit with water and MMS instead of those syringes?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think most of the families right now are using Fleet is a brand that's available internationally. I know in Venezuela you can even find Fleet. The Fleet enemas, they usually come with a little bit of a liquid in it. We throw the liquid away, and we just keep the container. You can just wash it afterwards. And we just put in filtered water in the base of the Fleet. We put in our drops, depending on how much our child weighs, whether they're, you know, they need 8 drops or 10 drops or 15 or 20 or whatever it is. We put it right in there, and then we put the top on, and we can use it and reuse it. We use the adult Fleet enema even for little kids, because the actual tube that goes in is the exact same size, whether it's the child's version or the adult version, and we really need more water going in. So ideally, to get the water up, we need to use the bigger one. And some people, I have a mom that's doing two Fleets. She's breaking, like, you know, 5 drops into 2 Fleets, and that's actually really ideal, you know, or 15, if you have 15 drop dose enema, you can actually use 137, so 280 basically milliliters of water and break it up, which is really good, because the farther up we can get the water. And it's also a good idea if you wait till after a regular evacuation. So after somebody actually goes to the bathroom, that's a really good time to put the enema in. Of course, if we want to avoid accidents, we should usually be doing the enemas when we're not planning on leaving the house again for the rest of the day, because if you do it to yourself, to some of the moms were doing it ourselves, and you find it, like, later on in the day, like, oops, because it actually, the liquid gets up even higher. And so sometimes it can take hours before the whole thing actually is out of the body.
Excellent. There is a little chat going on right now live about what kind of foods and antioxidants we should avoid with MMS. And I know that could be a pretty long list, but if you just want to touch on that briefly for the people who are just listening and not reading the live chat.
I think that it's really important not to panic, first of all, because a lot of us are like, oh, my God, I'm killing the MMS. Yeah, I mean, it would be really nice in a perfect world that there were no antioxidants in certain foods, and then, of course, in other ones that we can leave out. The big bad things are anything citric. So we have grapefruits, oranges, mandarin oranges, lemons, limes. Those are really bad. They're just really not a good time to be eating those. I had a self-interest behavior child who was doing beautifully on his MMS, and then mom decided to do a ceviche day with a lemon water, and it went off the hook. And it was very hard to gain control of that situation again. So it doesn't really matter, you know, how many hours away you have from the MMS. It can do a whole lot of damage. The citric can do a whole lot of the ascorbic acid that can do a lot of damage to the vitamin C can do a lot of damage to the MMS. So we need to avoid those at all costs. Juices in general are really bad, just for our kids in general, because we need to have the immune system turned on. And if we're drinking a lot of juice, even if, in fact, the juice is a natural juice, you know, press it home or organic or whatever, there's still, when you take, you know, 6 or 7 apples and make a small glass of apple juice, there's still a lot of natural sugar in there. And we'll turn off the immune system, kind of like the way when, you know, the high school experiment, we had the light bulb, and we had the cables going into the bucket of water, and then we put in the sea salt, the light would go on in the light bulb, and then we put sugar in, and the light would go off. It's pretty much like that. You reduce the conductivity to almost nothing, and we really need to keep the conductivity as high as possible in our kids for healing, and we need to help that immune system to be present at all times, because it's got a very big job to do. Antioxidant supplements are a problem because they seem to last, and I had a really bad experience with a fabulous product one time, but this one product has very strong vitamin E in it, And so it would last for a very long time, and children were doing terrible all of a sudden. It was because it was killing the MMS that was having them actually do very well. So from then on, I've become very, very afraid of pineapple juice. Oh, Lord. That was another biggie. A mom was doing pineapple juice for 9 months, and we couldn't figure out. You know, he was gluten-free, casein-free. He was specific carbohydrate. And then it turned out that there was pineapple juice, which is also a very strong vitamin C. So juices are bad, and the citrus are really, really rough, and any kind of an antioxidant supplement. When I mean antioxidant supplements, a lot of supplements, like some say, oh, GABA is an antioxidant. Well, it's, you know, the amino acid, it's a different situation. Vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A, CoQ10, those are some of the principal problems that we have. So to avoid those would be really good, especially to avoid those for the first few months. You know, let's see how far along we can get this child into the recovery. And then if somebody really feels strongly about a certain supplement, add it back in and see if you get some regression or if you see that you're actually able to work the two together. I just haven't been able to successfully do antioxidants with oxidants.
Very good. That was helpful. Thank you very much. We are getting close to the end of our hour. I think we could probably go for a little bit over because I want to talk about something that I've had a couple people comment on, and that is the issue of virus, which I know has been a major issue with a lot of these kids. It's not the easiest thing to kill. So let's start off with this question. What viruses do we see in autism that are combated with MMS?
That's a really good question, and I would have to say I'm not really too sure because we only started doing labs based on the biofilm principle of Dr. Usman and the labs for that protocol pretty much after the fact. Like, we start using the MMS and we start doing the protocols, and then when the children really aren't recovering, you know, 4, 5, 6 months, and we're not seeing that, you know, that they've turned the corner and they're coming around, that's when we started ordering these labs. They would go into the doctor and they would order the lab. And then some of the children that weren't recovering as quickly were having these viruses. In my son's case, he has two viruses. One is Epstein-Barr and the other one is the human herpes virus 6, which are probably the worst possible things anybody could have. You know, there's some other stuff. But anyway, that's not so wonderful. And I have not noticed that they've been damaged by the MMS. He's better, and of course I haven't rerun the labs. I'm going to run them in July. So it is going to be important. I have seen also adding in the biofilm protocol. So based on the supplementation and the principles of Dr. Usman's protocol, using the biofilm defense enzyme to actually drive the antiviral or the antibacterial into the biofilm, we use some doctors are recommending the Valtrex, which is great for some of these viruses. Some are using herbs. Some are using LDN-100. So it just depends on what they're using. And then they use bio-chelate. Bio-chelate is the EDTA chelator, which is ionized and magnetized. So really, it's a very, it's 2 milligrams the entire bottle, and we're only using drops of it. So we kind of combine those things all together and to help out. So we now then have an MMS protocol, we have in the parasite protocol, and then we have in the biofilm protocol. And then we usually do some hyperbarics at that point too. So we just try to get a lot of other things in when we get stuck on a virus. Viruses are really challenging, and hopefully pretty soon there's going to be some smart people that are going to help us understand that even more.
Okay, so keeping with that line of thinking, if we see that a virus is trying to get out while we're using MMS, for example, it's trying to get out through the skin, it looks like a rash, or we have redness in the eyes, what should we do when we might be concerned it looks like a rash or something else, but it's actually probably virus trying to get out of the skin? What do we do?
We keep on with our protocols because really we're just driving it out, and we're driving, the idea is to drive the virus out and not actually suppress the virus. So just to keep on doing what we're doing, the baths are fabulous because the baths get into the skin lining, and the viruses really like the nerves. So we have a lot of nerve endings in our skin, so that's really a good reason to be using those baths to get the skin saturated with the MMS. Just to, you know, keep hitting it. You know, some of our kids are going to recover really quickly. You know, I've seen, just saw the other day, a few weeks ago, a lady, her child recovered in 2 months. It was unbelievable. But some of the little kids are going to pop out really, really fast because they're not really sick. They don't really have it that bad. They, you know, might have been nonverbal, but all of a sudden a 2-year-old with the right diet and the right supplementation or in the right protocols are going to just pop right out. And there's going to be a child maybe like mine who's 11. He's going to have a longer road because we just found this not that long ago, and so we just need to keep pushing forward using what we have, because these are all the same things that we've been using, just using them a little bit differently.
Excellent. Okay. Before we wrap this up with some closing comments, I got one last question here. Well, actually, before I take the question, I'm going to say something else. There was one good question about MMS. Antioxidants, and isn't MMS an oxidant, and don't I need antioxidants to be healthy? I think that's a whole nother conversation. Maybe we want to have that with Jim or maybe Andreas. I'm not going to get into that right now because Andreas just did a whole thing the other day on oxidative stress, and I correct on
beautiful,
YouTube.
Beautiful.
Maybe you want to say.
Yeah, I just watched it. Actually, I watched it on Sunday. It's called Health Prohibited, and it's in Spanish, and they're working right now with Dan Bender, who's a magic man on the camera and in editing and everything. And so he's putting it together so that they're going to dub it in English, because Andreas speaks several languages, among them English, Spanish, German. And so they're going to actually do that, because it's fabulous. It really talks about the idea of where did this whole thing with the antioxidants being so good and the oxidative stress come from. And then, of course, adding fuel to the fire, the $18 billion a year that antioxidants bring in. And really oxidation and oxidative stress comes from all these pathogens and all their stool, their feces basically in the body is causing this oxidative stress. And we actually drive down the pathogens, the oxidative stress seems to go away. That's how these children are recovering too, because we're actually just getting rid of the root cause of the problem. But Andreas does a beautiful job in that conference.
So that's something that whenever that gets translated to English, we can announce it, put it in the newsletter, we'll put it on the website and everything so that everybody can watch that, because that's a whole conversation. And it's really important to understand that so people don't get scared, because MMS is an oxidant, and we've kind of been indoctrinated, you know, myself especially, over the years when I first heard about MMS, I was thinking the same thing. That's an oxidant. Why is everybody telling me to take antioxidants? Why would I consider taking an oxidant? So it's important that we don't get scared about that. So when that video comes out in English, we'll announce it so everybody can learn a little bit more about how the science works behind that. Quick question about MMS and metals. Jim Humble had said we shouldn't be storing our MMS in stainless steel. Is this correct? Like she was asking for the enema preparation, you know, you always do yours in glass, a shot glass or a liter glass jar, whatever you're going to do. Is stainless steel okay? Is it not okay? Should we avoid the metals?
Well, what he was saying is that we don't, what I noticed too, when I was storing the MMS in the daytime, like I had kind of like a plastic baby bottle instead of the glass baby bottle. I noticed that it was degrading. Like you could smell it, and you could smell the plastic after you wash the bottle. So I know that it will degrade certain plastics. Obviously, it's probably not going to degrade all plastics, but I think if you were doing an MMS in one of those stainless steel enema buckets, it's in water. It's not going to be there very long. I don't think that there would be any problem with that whatsoever, because those are actually really good buckets to use. I saw those on, somebody posted a website the other day on the Facebook page. It's like Yoga and Life or something. But they had a lot of nice options for getting more liquid, because I think it's really important that we do use more than the fleet only gives us 137 milliliters. It's really not a lot of water. It's fine for the really little kids, maybe the 2 or 3-year-olds. But as our kids get older, they really need more than that.
Excellent. Okay. So what I'm going to do is, if anyone asked me a question in the live chat and we didn't get to it, please send me your email, send me the question. We will get those questions answered. And the questions that are, you know, have been repeated that we didn't get to today, we will definitely address those in a future webinar. We would love to. Carrie, do you have anything, any closing comments you'd like to make before we wrap this up for tonight?
Thank you all for being with me. It's really exciting to be able to help you, and I wish you all, I wish everybody to have their child recover. I think it's the greatest gift that I've seen given to parents, and I would like it for all of us, myself included. And it's been a pleasure getting to know any of you that I already know, most of you. And I wish you all the best, and we're going to keep looking so that all of our kids recover and not just stop here. There's a lot of really smart people that are helping in the back, and that's going to help us more and more to find more and more answers. But sometimes we have to break the paradigms. We have to stop thinking the way that they've been telling us to think, antioxidants, and that this is bad. There's certain things that we need to kind of change and start to learn, and I think that Andreas is going to help give us the science so that the mothers can proceed with less fear, because there's a lot of stuff out there that could give people fear, but and the reality is it's actually quite safe. And the chemical engineer, one of my best friends, she's a chemical engineer, and as soon as I told her we're going to start using chlorine dioxide, she's like, yeah, absolutely, I'm getting some, and bought it right away and started giving it to her child. And, you know, when the people that really understand chemistry go, yeah, absolutely, that works. That's great. So I wish you all the best, and we're going to try and keep giving you more webinars. Keep informed, you know, stay close to Kim, stay close to me, ask, you know, whatever you need so that we can make this happen better. It's nice that we can meet in these kind of forums. If somebody wants to do a conference in their city, let's do it. I'll be at Autism One May 27th at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So right before you go to church, come on over. We're going to have a good time, and I look forward to meeting all of you. And I'm sure there's something else that I want to say later, but
while you're thinking about that, there's something else we need to announce, and that is the first ever MMS training course that's going to be here in Puerto Vallarta. My sister Carrie is going to be presenting. Jim Humble, obviously, is going to be presenting. An amazing lady named Janet Henlin is going to be presenting on her work with MMS and cancer recovery. Yes, healing cancer. That is happening May 7th. Through 11th here in Puerto Vallarta. It's the first ever MMS training session here. As you know, Jim used to be in the Dominican Republic. This is the first one ever. If anybody wants more information about this one, please email me. It's pico138@hotmail.com. I will get you the information, get everything you need. There's going to be more. Please let me know if you want to get on our mailing list so we can announce that. That's going to be really exciting. Andreas is going to be showing up for that. It's going to be a fun time.
I have the greatest wingman in the world, the best sister in the world. Thank you all for being with us. It's so exciting.
Before we sign off, actually, I'm going to take this over for a minute here. Let's see. Oh, there I am. Hello. Here we are. Okay, before we sign off for tonight, I need to talk about something that neither me nor my sister likes to talk about, but that is the financial aspect. Lately, she's been getting more attention than ever in English, and that is generating a lot of buzz, and it's great, and she's helping a lot more people than ever. But what we really need right now is for some of our projects to come to fruition. One of those is a new website that is going to be in English. It's going to be www.mmsautism.com. She bought the domain the other day. That's ours. And now we just need to get it up and get all the information up there, because people are coming out of the woodwork asking her, well, what do I do? You know, what is this MMS? How do I do it with autism? Where are the protocols? And she's having to start from zero with all of her new people, and she's happy to do it. Something that she would never tell you, but I will, is that she fields between 150 and 300 emails a day personally, helping anyone that has a question, that has a doubt. She's there all day making sure that people get the information that they need to get their kids better. So what we need right now is actually financial support. So if anyone feels so inclined, if you have been helped by my sister, if your child is better, if you would be so kind, we need to pay our people that help us help people. So we're taking donations at her email. It's carrierivera@yahoo.com through PayPal. And all that money is going to go to getting these webinars set up. We are getting our new website in English set up. And any other funds always goes to helping kids at the clinic. She gives out supplements. We give out oxygen, anything that we're writing a book. We're writing a book. We got to get that done too. Yadolene, thank you. And that's going to come out in English. It's going to be available internationally, and it's going to be my sister's protocol spelled out so that anybody who doesn't have access to her can heal their kid. So those are a few of the things that we are working on right now. And so if you would like to help us, we would love your help. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was a lot of fun, and I'm going to turn it back over to my sister. Thank you. Thank you so very much, and we'll be in touch.
The ugly reality of all this, but it's really great to be able to come to you with a webinar and to be able to hopefully get that book out in the next 30 to 60 days. And that would be wonderful to be able to share the protocols, and all this information will be there so people can actually have it at the tip of their fingers, and you can make Xerox copies of it and give it to your neighbor, and that'll just, but it'll be really important to get that information out. So hopefully that'll happen really soon. And my support, as you can see, is there's a lot going on behind the scenes that isn't me. So anyway, thank you very much for joining me, and I hope to see you maybe next week with Jim Humble, and maybe the next week after that with Andreas Kalker. So it'll be interesting to see your emails come into Kim and see if people are really interested, and then we'll try and figure it out, because we're going to be kind of busy the next couple weeks. But if you want it, we'll be there.
And I'm getting a feed right now. Again, if you would like to help us, it's Keri Rivera. It's her email, KerriRivera at yahoo.com, and that's through PayPal. So you just go to paypal.com and type in my sister's email, and that's it. So thank you so, so very much, and you have a beautiful evening. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.